bathroom crying, awkward karaoke, so many exes, breaking and entering, and Colin Firth. That's right. Today we are talking about 2023 English rom-com Rye Lane with David Johnson and Vivian Opara.
Welcome to the Rom-Com Rescue Podcast, a brand new podcast where we bring the love and life lessons from your favorite rom-coms. I'm Kira Sabin. I'm a healthy dating educator, a certified coach, and a positive psychology practitioner. But more importantly, I spend my days teaching the skills and mindsets of dating.
And I'm Dr. Isabel Morley. I'm a licensed clinical psychologist and an EFT certified couples therapist. And I help couples have the happiest, healthiest relationship possible. Join us weekly as we break down the best love lessons from your favorite rom-coms so we can all get into the best relationships possible, because we believe that we create our own happily ever afters.
Hello, everybody. We are so glad you're here. Welcome back. I think that I cannot say I am more excited about a rom-com than this rom-com today. And I've been wanting to do it, and I pushed it up sooner than I was planning on. Because I loved it so much, now I have brought Isabel into my world because it's so good. But we're discussing 2023 Rye Lane today, and we're super excited about it.
So excited. This is going to be a great conversation. What a good movie. I cannot wait to dive into it with you.
Before we do, we're back with a couple of fun facts as we want you to know who we are, and we're getting to learn more and more about each other. So I'm a big traveler in my past. As I've mentioned, I work on cruise ships, so I got to go to a lot of cool places. But I would love to know, where is the best place that we've ever traveled to? So where's our favorite place on Earth, kind of thing? And then where would you like to go if you could go anywhere?
You go first, because I have to think about that second one.
I mean, I'm having a very hard time with number one. Because it's, do I want to spend a day somewhere, or do I want to spend a week somewhere, or a month somewhere? And those all look very different. But my instant answer is always Santorini, Greece. I have had the most enchanting and beautiful days in Santorini. When I worked on ships, all of my staff friends and I would rent four-wheelers for the day, because most of the roads, it's actually a very small island. It's all connected. You can get anywhere on a moped or a four-wheeler. And we would just go around the island, eat great food, swim in the ocean. And it's just magical. Mm. It's magical. And then that's a big tie for the Isle of Capri in Italy also. That is, I had probably one of the most magical days of my life at the Isle of Capri in the 90s. And it'll just always go down as beautiful and amazing. Like day drunk, romantic. Walking around the island, stumbling upon a local making fresh Neapolitan pizza, and he doesn't speak English and I don't speak Italian, and he shows me how to make it in Italian, and it's 3 p.m. and I'm drunk, and it's like the best day.
Eat, and that pray, love.
Oh, it was the best day ever. But I mean, I'm so lucky. I've been to Bora Bora, and Costa Rica has my heart forever. So I mean, there's so many places that I'm lucky and that I've gotten to experience. And yeah, so fun. What about you?
Oh my gosh. My answer is going to feel so basic in response, I think. So any destination that I care about, that I have gone to, that I want to go to, is based on the wildlife.
Yes.
Because I love me some birds. Big birder. So I would have to say the top place, just vacation-wise, was Orcas Island in Washington State, which is off the coast of Seattle towards Canada. And I got to see orcas, which are one of my favorite animals, and so many amazing birds. And that climate is just my climate. I'm meant to live on Orcas Island. I'm meant to have those sort of rainy Pacific days, and it's where I'm supposed to be. It's not where I am, but if I didn't have things tying me down to the East Coast, I would be on that island. Love
goals.
That island.
Goals, 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 right?
That's right.
I am so seasonal depressed, even though I love the Northwest vibe. The rain is not my friend for seasonal depression. So unfortunately, I can't probably spend a ton of time in the Pacific Northwest, but I will visit you.
And oh, that would be lovely.
One of the things that that we connected with quickly is we are both such animal lovers and wildlife. And you're right. That's why Costa Rica has my heart. I wish that this was, I'm joking when I say this, but I probably weekly say to Danny, I'm so bummed that there's not monkeys out our window. The best thing about living in Costa Rica is you see the tree moving and you're like, is it one kind of monkey? Is it a sloth? Is it a macaw? Is it? I mean, there's just so many cool animals, and it's not that we don't have wildlife here in Wisconsin, but it's not quite the same.
You have cows, okay?
We do. I don't know if that's considered
wildlife.
Not
very wild.
Lots of squirrels, lots of deer.
I love squirrels.
I know you do. Will you please tell everybody? I didn't mean to bring that up, but will you tell everybody your relationship with squirrels?
Squirrels?
Your personal relationship with squirrels?
It's actually a sensitive subject, so I'm glad you brought it up. I think that they are the most underappreciated, amazing, magical animal. If they didn't exist and suddenly a squirrel popped into our lives, we would be like, this is out of a movie, out of a book.
Right.
This adorable little creature that climbs everywhere with a big bushy tail. It's a sensitive subject because there used to be a bunch of squirrels living in these trees next to my house, and they have all moved out, and this year crows have moved in. And I do love birds and crows, but I got to tell you, I miss my squirrel buddies. I look out my window, nothing. So
it's a different vibe, right? Crows to squirrels, different vibe for sure.
Very different. And the crows, actually, I saw them attack a squirrel the other day, so I'm going through it, actually, now that you mention it. Yeah.
Wow. Thank you for bringing that to this podcast.
I'm glad I could share that. Yeah.
We'll have to talk it through afterwards. But yeah, I love wildlife. And you're absolutely right, because when you've seen an animal every single day of your life, it just doesn't become special anymore. But absolutely, squirrels are adorable and cheeky and wonderful. There's so many incredible animals. I'm just, on a regular basis, would rather spend the day with animals than humans.
I feel that. So where do you want to go? Where do the animals call to you, Kira?
Well, two places. I can't seem to narrow down because I've never been to more the southern part of Africa. I have been to some of the northern. I've been to Morocco. I've been to Tunisia. But I would love to do a safari. I would love to, you know.
Get out of my head. This is
there's a giraffe hotel I'm sure people have seen. And I want to check that out and just... Oh, there's so many cool places, but I also want to go to the Galapagos. That's always been a dream of mine, is the Galapagos. It's just...
Oh, yes.
That's like turtles. like a bucket list, once in a lifetime kind of situation to get there. And so, yeah.
Love that idea.
You?
I would not have thought about that. I was thinking South Africa. I would love to go do an ethical safari. Mm-hmm. I would love to go to the wineries there. I would love to see the culture. I have never been to Greece or Italy or Spain, so I feel like I need to do a Euro trip as well.
You do.
I would love that. My brother-in-law is Greek, and his family has a house on one of the islands in Greece, and it's almost a crime that I haven't gone at this point. So it's tied between those two.
I've luckily had the chance to spend 3 summers in the Mediterranean, traveling to Spain and France and Greece and all of the places. And they're for sure some of the most magical times of my life. It's just incredible.
Oh, it sounds amazing. Sounds amazing. But this week, we got to take a tour of Rye Lane.
That's right. Bringing it back to the movie.
The
and I've actually spent very little time in London. I've only been to London a couple of times and more for the day or flying through Heathrow. So I actually haven't spent a lot of time in London. And this was... an awesome glimpse into South London. Let's talk about it. Can you break us down a couple of plot basics here from, it's from Wikipedia, but let me tell you, I could not find anything more than this for
this
plot basic.
This is what happens, though. It's a tight enough plot that I think this covers it. So from Wikipedia, Yaz, who is Vivian O'Para, and Dom, who's David Johnson, two 20-somethings, both reeling from bad breakups, connect over the course of an eventful day in South London, helping each other deal with their nightmare exes and potentially restoring their faith in romance.
It works.
Beautiful synopsis.
That plot is so short in comparison to all the different things that happen in, let's say, How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days, because there's a bet, and then there's also an advertising account and a magazine and all of these different parts. This is just two random people, friends of a friend, meeting each other and spending the day together, which to me felt so real. But I'm jumping the gun. Mm. First impressions. What do you think of this movie?
Well, this is a true first impression because I hadn't seen it. And oh my God, I loved it. It felt so real. You believed it. You believed that this could happen, that this happened for these people. Sure, what happened with their exes was a little less believable, but this is real romance of what it looks like to meet someone and get caught up in a moment with them. And honestly, it made me nostalgic for dating. And if my husband listens to this, don't panic. It makes me miss dating you. Like the beginning of when you meet someone and you shirk other responsibilities and obligations and you let yourself be spontaneous and lost in the moment and you do random things you wouldn't do otherwise, like sing karaoke. That is so wonderful. And it's those moments of adventure that build something special. And it was nice to get caught up in them having that moment with each other. I see you smiling and nodding. You agree.
Of course. I love this movie. I stumbled across it last year. It was one of those things where Danny was probably working. And so I'm like, I'll watch like a rom-com or something while he's gone. He does watch rom-coms with me, but it felt so magical. I actually had a hard time making myself watching it. I was worried that it wouldn't be as magical as I remembered, because I have been shouting this rom-com's name from the mountaintops for the last year since I watched it, and it was as magical, if not better and more. But you are absolutely right. It reminds me so much of a younger version of myself, and just those carefree 20-something days where you're like drinking by 11 a.m. You're from Boston. I'm from Wisconsin.
Yeah,
so
that's a very fair
statement for both of our places. Drinking by 11 a.m., just having random conversations. I've had days just like this where mm-hmm. I meet somebody and we just decide to spend the day together. And there's the booze is flowing. The witty banter is fantastic. We end up making out by the end of it. We've discussed my love for dumpsters and making out back behind a bar. So this triggered in the best way all of my favorite parts of the hope of 20-something singles. Like when you have that hope of anything can happen. Today, I might meet somebody. Today, I might fall in love. What's harder about dating as we get older is we start losing that hope a little bit. And
you're more
it's
jaded.
A little harder to just meet random people and have day drinks. And you just mentioned going somewhere for wine, and I'm like, hangovers. So, I mean, our bodies change, and I don't day drink like I used to. And it was so fun when I did. And I'd take a little rally disco nap and
get back up at it,
right? So, this movie to me is what I want Hollywood to look at, because I've watched a lot of really shitty enemies to lovers rom-coms over the last 20 years of my life that were in no way as enchanting, as real, as good as anything as the simple two people walking around South London, not even a nice part of South London necessarily, right? Like a very real area mm-hmm. of South London. And having conversations and connecting and laughing together and challenging each other and
it wasn't
supporting
perfect
each other.
Too. Yes, there was so much good, but they also got to each other and things came out that were untruthful or hurtful. Like it just felt so real. This is how people interact and get to know each other and are vulnerable and make mistakes. And you're right. So many of these rom-coms are just fake in comparison.
Here's what seems silly to me is that I don't know why we're so stuck on making such huge obstacles in the narrative.
Especially when we know that they're going to overcome the obstacles. Why do we even need them in the first place?
Absolutely. I would much rather this has a little bit of recognition of the before sunset or Sunrise
of
the 90s.
Yes.
And those were, to me, also so good and so real. And I just, to me, love is real. This is what it's like. You say awkward things. You have fun together. You laugh together. You learn about each other. Sometimes there's a connection and a match. Sometimes there's not. But this is what it is. I don't need somebody buying out your store. I don't need writing an article on how to lose a guy in 10 days. I don't need even wealthy socialites in Singapore. I just need two people getting to know each other and the awkward excitement and magical time that is.
And it is, like you said, there's so much hope of what it could be, and you don't know, and everything feels possible. And you, like I said, you just want to give up everything else to figure out what you have in front of you. And that happens less in life as you get older because you have a job and you have other obligations or a mortgage or whatever. And it's so beautiful to see people just have none of that weighing them down or deciding to ignore those things that they should maybe feel obligated to, because what they have in front of them is so compelling and exciting that they want to invest in it, even though they don't know if it's something that's worth their time yet. And I feel like as we get older, everything has to be worth our time. I'm going to go on a date. It has to be worth it if I'm going to not work during that hour, if I'm going to miss out on being in my PJs watching a show I love. And it's the magic, like you said, the magic they had.
I want to watch it again. We become more guarded, right? As we get older, we become more guarded, where we've been hurt more. We have had people maybe take advantage or disappoint us. And so it's just very hard to let down our guard in that way. It's really hard to just openly connect on a random day like that as we get older. We can't just throw caution to the wind and pick up and just take the day off or do whatever. That feels less rare. And I want to say that since I work with singles, one of the things I always say to my single ladies is, do not discount this amazing time in your life, especially those who are not single parents. If you don't have kids, if you don't have maybe only a dog or a cat, there's so many things that you can do. You can sometimes just up and pick up your life and try something new in a way that you can't as you get older or get married, or especially have kids. Now, I don't have kids, but I have a husband and we have animals. So there is a former version of myself that if I'm unhappy, I just up and I move somewhere. And I've done it multiple times. I moved to LA. I worked at a camp in upstate New York. I have lived a lot of places. I worked on cruise ships. And I mean, there's been times in the last year where I have wanted to run. That's part of my trauma response or fear response. And I can't. And I'll tell you, the feelings and the emotions I've had to go through because I realized that I now have commitments that I did not have when I was younger can sometimes really be hard and fuck with you.
It can. Yeah, that freedom is taken away, but we also forget to build in that freedom. And a couple weeks ago, my husband and I agreed to take a day off from work for no reason other than to have a day off from work together, which was hard for us to justify because we already take enough days off with kids who are sick every other week and other things we have to do. And it was like this was such an indulgence on our part to take a day off and go to lunch together in the middle of the work week. But it was so great. And it should be done more probably. And we just forget to make that a priority and build that in because other things feel more important, more urgent. But I'm biased here, but I would argue your relationship is the most important urgent thing much of the time. And so we should be elevating it more than we do. And I think Rylane reminds us of that, of what it feels like to just put everything else aside and be with the person you want to be with. It was so lovely.
I think that one of the greatest things or things that I'm really proud of Danny and I for doing is making sure we prioritize each other, making sure we prioritize even just a cheap, fun day together, even if it's just going to the farmer's market and getting a coffee and walking around. And whether sometimes we go to arcades and we love to both play old school video games, but just finding those moments where we can connect and laugh because life gets in the way and it's not that easy. And why I tell people to do the work with me and then with you is because your relationship can be solid as fuck and life is still going to show up. Mm-hmm. Life is still going to push on it and pull on it and everything else. So yeah, I love this. What do we think are some of the best love lessons? And I think that there were a ton, and not all of them were healthy, right? But they were still good lessons.
Oh, there are so many. I feel like I need to pick and choose.
Can I just start by saying,
yeah.
And I did some good research. The coolest thing about this coming out a year ago is there were a lot of interviews on YouTube with the director and the stars. There wasn't a ton of trivia for later, but I was able to get behind the scenes and that the director and everybody who started in this were like, I had no intention of being in a rom-com. But everybody fell in love with the script so much that they're like, why not? But I love that the opening scene, we see our lead male crying in the bathroom.
Pink Shoes.
When do we see that in Pink Shoes? Yes. When do we see that? When in American rom-coms do we get to see so much vulnerability right off the top, so much emotion? And the guy who played him was like, I was tied in right away. Seeing this, seeing the first time that we meet this guy, he's actually sobbing, looking at his ex on his phone in the bathroom. And that's their meet cute. And she sees his shoes underneath the door and is, are you okay, dude? Like, everything okay in there? And he's, no, I'm having a moment.
Go away.
Yeah, exactly. And the thing is, that's life. We meet people weirdly sometimes and awkwardly. We do weird things like cry in public bathrooms. And I could not be more excited, or as the English say, chuffed, that they decided to start his character off like that, because I feel like that is so not what we see usually. Mm-hmm. Usually we may see some emotion or vulnerability from a guy, but it's later on, after they've let down their wall a little bit, something has happened.
The other person, and then they finally feel sad.
So seeing that kind of vulnerability from the moment just felt fresh and exciting to me, because I'm like, where is this going to go? She's, you okay? Everything okay in there? And he's just sobbing. And then just for power dynamics that they luckily get rid of during the movie, he doesn't know that she's the one who was in the bathroom with him until a little bit later. But it, I don't know. It was so good. And just
the vulnerability.
The vulnerability piece. And we have been talking about how we have not loved how they've been writing a lot of these male characters.
Yeah.
And to me, Dom is what I love to see. In this moment, he is vulnerable. He is real. He is honest. He is stable. He has an inner strength that just works for me, that I'm like, I love this guy. I want to set this guy up with every one of my clients. This is what I want to.
Absolutely not. Dom is ours. We will not give Dom away. Dom must be protected at all costs. Oh, well, I've got thoughts on Dom that I'll get to. But he is the male character we have been missing so far. I 100% agree. He's vulnerable, but he doesn't just roll over when Yaz does things he doesn't agree with or that hurt him. He's so nice. His smile breaks my heart. I can't even talk about it. His adorable, handsome smile. Oh my God. He is just a great character and not perfect, which I also really, but neither of them are perfect. And I think that was really important too for the realness factor. And Yaz was vulnerable at times too, but she's more defended. She clearly was not quite as ready to just lay everything out on the table and be seen in the way that Dom was willing to be seen. But, and a good love lesson I'll say, is we see her take responsibility in the end. Like, she's the one who does the grand gesture, which is important for him, but also for her to be vulnerable and take that risk. She owns what she did, which is to lie about what actually happened with her ex, right? Like, she says, I did it for this reason, it wasn't right. She references parts of their day together to show like how connected and meaningful it was. And then they talk about it. And that was growth. That was taking responsibility. That was what you want to see from a partner, because your partner is going to mess up with you. What you want to be able to know is that eventually they'll reflect and come back around and say, yeah, I messed up with you. Here's how. I get it. And so seeing that from her was like, yes, that's self-growth.
Absolutely. And just how they both kind of step back and were like, okay, I met somebody I'm interested in. Maybe I'm not quite as ready as I thought I was. And so we did get to see that a little bit of time, that montage of him getting his own place again and setting himself up, her going after a costume job that she was really wanting to, which was a kind of a hurdle during their day together. And at the end, all they do is say, this is nice, and kiss. And they're going to maybe go on a couple dates and see what happens. Nobody's getting married. Nobody got down on one fucking knee. Nobody's declaring their deep ass love for somebody. They're just like,
yes,
we spent a kind of a cool day together. I don't know if we were quite ready for it yet, but we took
now?
A little time and let's check this out, which is exactly what fucking rom-com should be doing.
And
dating.
They weren't devastated when they decided, okay, this is obviously not right now. This doesn't feel quite right. We didn't see the montage of them like laying in bed for 2 months, right? Crying into the ice cream. It was like, that's a huge disappointment. I really liked that person. I'm going to keep living my life even as I miss them and do this self-work. And that's what it should be like. Whereas so many rom-coms, it's like when they have that moment of not making it, everyone just decompensates. No one can function anymore because their life is dependent on the partner being in it. And I don't love that lesson. I don't love that message. I think being devastated to a degree is fine, understandable, but don't give up your entire life, especially not after one day of knowing somebody. So I really love that they did that instead of the overly dramatic way they could have played it.
It felt realistic. That's what's realistic, is that the two of them you see after they spent the day together and had these moments and then it went a little weird at the end. They go home and you see them like reflecting, thinking about it, wondering if they should apologize or reach out. That's a normal fucking response.
I loved that
we learn about how he finds out that his, and we're clearly spoiling this movie all over the place, but he finds out that his girlfriend of 6 years is sleeping with his best friend since childhood. And he's telling the story. And one of the greatest things I think about what the director did was when they're telling stories, it's very more like dramatized and dramatic and one-sided. It's definitely their version of the story. But he's telling the story. I screenshot. I see my best friend's dick in the background.
A low-res.
Low-res. Low-res dick in the background. I know exactly who it is because he's been my best friend for years. And then she's like, what'd you do? And he goes,
Beat him up.
But then he goes, no. Not really. I went to the movie and cried while I ate my popcorn. I was like, that's fucking real. That's what the average person would probably do. They're not going and chasing down. Probably in that moment where you're hurt and you realize that two of the most important people in your life have let you down and disappointed you, you're probably crying in a movie theater. That's probably a very...
I don't know. I'm showing up at that house.
Oh,
if I know
you?
Where they are, I want that evidence that none of us can deny. I'm seeing you and you're seeing me and we all know what's going on now. I would have showed up. And this is the part where I feel like I've got some questions about Dom, which we'll get to. But I feel like that was a little too passive and it didn't do him any favors necessarily.
And we definitely see that about Dom. He's a little bit of a people pleaser. Mm-hmm.
He shows up to a meeting with his ex and his, I guess, ex-best friend at this point because they want closure from him, and he shows up for that meeting. What?
So let's get into this for a minute because you and I, because I wrote something down and then you're like, let's definitely discuss this. So basically his ex and best friend are cheating and they've been together 6 years. They're living together. This is a significant freaking relationship. He finds out that they're cheating. It's been now, I think, 3 months.
3 months. Mm-hmm.
And the day that he meets Yaz, he goes to his friend's art thing, ends up buying one of his mouth photos. But then Yaz gets out of him that he's on his way to see his ex and his, I don't know, best friend or ex-best friend. I don't know what we're doing.
Eric, whoever Eric is.
He has not seen them since. And that she wants to bring them together to, quote unquote, clear the air. And I wanted to talk to you because I think that happens a lot, right? Where maybe somebody has done something not good in a relationship, whether that be cheating, whether that be lying, whether that be whatevering. And then they want to come back and clear the air, but it's really for them. Mm-hmm. And the question I asked in our notes is, do they deserve that? Do we owe people a chance to clear the air? when they have hurt us. And this is a pretty bad hurt. Cheating 6 years with his best friend, that's doesn't get much worse.
No. I mean, I'll nitpick a little bit because deserve and oh, I see is different things. Do people deserve it? Sure. Are they owed it? No. And I think they're allowed to ask. I think if it's haunting them and they would like the opportunity to clear the air, I mean, ideally, it would be them showing up and showing a little more remorse and taking some responsibility as part of clearing the air, which we do not see happen with his ex.
At all.
I think you are allowed to ask 100%. I think the other person does not owe it to you to do that because they have to make a decision for them about whether that is going to be good for them or not. And I think Dom, in this case, doesn't think about if this is a good decision for him. He thinks, oh, well, that makes sense that they want that, so I should show up and do that for them without considering if that's what's good for him. And it turns out it's the worst case scenario, which is we feel bad whenever we see something that reminds us of you. We feel guilty, so we want to make sure that you forgive us so that we don't feel bad anymore.
The condescension of the beginning of that meeting, I was so mad, like, for him. But they like, reference Portugal. And then
you
could
solo travel.
Eric, blesses Con Sox because he was actually one of my favorite characters. He was hilarious, that the actor who played him. But how he's, yeah, there's a lot of solo travelers. I'm like, you guys suck. When they said that, I was like, you guys suck that you cheated on him with his best friend and are now bringing up a recent trip that you guys went to, had fun, and oh, he should check it out too because solo travelers love it. I mean, every part of me was like, that's a big fuck you from me.
Yeah, from anyone but Eric, because Eric, I think, he's got two brain cells talking to each other, and that's the best he can do. When Yaz walks in and he says to Dom, moving on up, you don't really get how you land for people, do you? You have no idea how you impact people. You are just floating about, saying things. Oh, Eric. I mean, he's living his best life. That's for sure.
I'm a fan of the NPR podcast, Pop Culture Happy Hour. And they did do an episode about this, so I listened to it. And they said it. They were like, Eric was the perfect himbo. And I'm like, it's totally true. He's ripped.
He's handsome.
He's loving life. He's not really that affected by too much. He's just there for the ride and doesn't really see that he's hurt his friend that much. Doesn't really. He's barely there.
He's barely there.
But it's so likable. You can see why people like him. Because he's no pressure, right? He has no expectations. You don't have to impress this guy because he's just fucking happy to be there. Which, but was a great and funny. It was that scene to me was so funny. But, so could I love this movie more? I don't know. Any other of your favorite love lessons?
I think seeing them having taken time to process their breakups, even though they're still mid-process when they meet each other, is great. They're still making sense of it. They're still talking about it a lot. They're still very entrenched in their perspective of it, but they're doing the work to figure out what happened, and they do more work afterwards once they decide to take a little time after seeing each other. I think the best part was seeing them show up for each other. There is no better example than the karaoke scene when they need to get into Mona's good graces by doing karaoke. And Yaz chickens out and gets too nervous. And so Dom, this is not his personality, for her, steps up onto the stage and starts rapping so she doesn't have to get her something she needs from Mona. And when he falters, Yaz steps in and embarrasses herself for him, or risks embarrassment. And I was like, that's it, is that maybe you don't want to do it for your own self, but you'll do it for another person that you care about. I just thought that was a beautiful example of showing up for somebody.
Agreed. I said throughout that day, they just kept rescuing each other a little bit in the nicest and most lovely way, which I like to see because I don't want to see just one person coming in and rescuing or trying to fix the other one. I love that they both kept taking care of each other, and just seeing each other and caring about each other as just humans and potential friends and everything else. But she sticks up for Dom. Dom sticks up for her. And I'm just going to out myself. I feel like I can't even believe I've gone this long without saying it, but
I'm excited.
I am Yaz on some level is 100% me in my 20s. And this is what I will say about Yaz, the main female character, is to me, the words I use are unboundaried and chaotic.
Fun, but...
Fun, charming, silly, a little bit of the life of the party, right? Mm-hmm. Seemingly confident, very insecure. These are all...
Baby Kira.
Whew, I think maybe part of the reason I love this movie so much is because I'm a little bit Yaz and Danny is definitely Dom. Dom and Danny are very similar humans. They are stable. They are kind. They stick up or stand up for what they think is right. I even like the fact that in a later scene in the movie where they go back to their friend who is now not taking pictures of mouths, but taking pictures of butts. Yeah. And their mutual friend was like, you can turn around, Dom, and look at my butt if you want. It's that one right there. And he just is embarrassed and won't. And I'm like, that's Danny. He would actually not do that. Out of respect to the people in the room, he would be like, nope, that's okay. He's just that guy. He's not sneaking a look. He's just a good guy. And Dom is a good fucking guy. And I love that they just show a good guy who struggles, has emotions, gets vulnerable, sometimes reacts, but is still kind. He never, if there's somebody who lashes out, it's her, not him. I loved Yaz, and my younger version of me broke for her because, like, see her. I see how much she's trying to be okay and to seem okay to everybody in her life. And inside, she's lonely and hurting. She's just been broken up with. She's clearly not over it yet. She lies that she broke up with him versus the other way around. So I just have to say it was so fun to watch her, but this was very relatable to me in a way that many of the other characters are not, because that was me. I was very likable at that time. I wasn't really lovable.
Oh, Kira, an important distinction.
I could win over a crowd. I was super funny. My witty banter game was on point. I have made out in many bathrooms at bars. Many, right? So when they sing karaoke and they're both on a little bit of a high and she kisses him and then they go make out in the bathroom, I wrote, hot.
You're like, I've been in that bathroom.
Right. I was like, that's hot. And it's because I have been in that situation many times. And it is hot when you have that connection and you're like, we need to make out right now.
Right now.
And I'm not a maker outer in front of other people. That's not my thing. But clearly, a dumpster or bathroom, so much better.
You want to hear my one short story, which is
I'd love to hear all of your stories on the 17-hour podcast.
I made out with a manager at a cool bar I used to go to in grad school and got him fired. Because he was not supposed to be doing that. He was working.
Isabel! Oh my goodness. Stirring. So I don't think I've ever gotten anybody fired before.
That's not that you know of. Maybe you did. Yeah.
It's not impossible. But,
you were Yaz.
I was very much Yaz. And so I just was able to really understand her character. And then it's funny because I watched a few interviews with the lead actors. And she is so calm. She is actually like, I'm an earth sign. So this was a really big reach for me to be this character and everything. And I was like, I could have just walked through this as an actor because it's me. So it was really interesting to see. She's like, I had to get into her headspace of why she would act this way.
And you were like, you should have just called me.
I know, right? I'm like, what headspace is that? That's just the normal headspace, right? No, but it's not, because she is super guarded. She is super insecure. And you can't see that right away. I think a lot of times we confuse some level of cockiness or confidence with self-worth, and they're not the same. Because I can tell you that people thought I was confident. I would think that they would think I was more confident when I was maybe 25, 26 than I would seem now. But there's an inner strength and self-worth that I have now that I did not have back then. It was fake.
Yeah,
I was faking until I made it, and it was just faking. There was no making.
But I think that is actually the best segue into the worst love lessons,
yes,
which is her as an example, right, of how you can mask insecurity and you can mask your vulnerability with this fake overconfidence and being super fun and easy to be around and making other people feel a little uncomfortable because you're so bold and pushing mm-hmm. them out of their comfort zones.
Oh my God. That's
back to being likable, not lovable. I think that's such a great way of saying it, because you can't be lovable if people don't actually know you. They can like the version of you they're interacting with, but if they don't know the real you and they don't see all parts of you and your vulnerability and your pain and your flaws, they can't really love you. And so she keeps Dom at a distance because of that until the end when she makes up for it.
Yes, absolutely. But you could see her unhealing from this breakup because she was doing things she shouldn't have done. She kind of drugged Dom into some things she yes. shouldn't have. And although things ended okay, I mean, we said it right in the beginning, like they were breaking and entering into her ex's house. She also ended up going to her ex's mom's house. That whole scene I thought was hilarious. I thought it was so funny, because one of the things that we haven't talked about is that when you do have an occasional day drinking, wandering around someone day, you do meet interesting characters. I have been in dive bars in Ireland. I mean, you meet interesting people along the way. And I loved that there was just so many just random people. We see a guy in a glitter cowboy outfit dancing by them. And then when they're at that barbecue...
with the weird interactions with people and Dom being so out of his element, trying so hard.
My heart was just like bleeding for him. And I know the feeling, because he's like, moms love me. Don't worry. I'm like what moms like. And then they were just nobody was having him. Nobody. And he was just trying so hard. And then I have to bring up that when they're at the barbecue and, you know, he's trying to blend in. So he's trying to have this conversation with this guy about music, and he's, yeah, I'm into hip hop and trap, maybe he said. And then when I've had a couple drinks like this, I really enjoy some Motown and I like some good reggae or something. And they're like, here, let me have your phone and I'll just play your music. And the very first song, my soundtrack standout, was Daniel Bedingfield, If You're Not the One. If you're not the one, then why do that? That song I listened to on repeat of a breakup in the early 2000s. So when that went off, I just laughed so hard, because it's such like a
heartfelt,
crying kind of song. And you know that he's listened to it probably hundreds of times during his breakup. Oh, my gosh. And then they play Terrence Trent D'Arby. And then he's like singing along to it. And you're in this awkward moment of this guy just like singing, sign my name across my heart. Just you run into characters, you run into awkward drunk people. I have heard interesting stories around the world from randomly day drinking. Mm. And I loved that weirdness, because that felt real. Like I said, more than anything, this felt so real versus contrived. But now, they were not necessarily on a date. They were not set up. They'd ended up just talking and ended up connecting a little bit. But as a dating educator, you should never be talking about your exes this quickly if you're meeting somebody.
If it wasn't the reason that they initially
Right. So
connected.
In this movie, that's different, because that's how they connected. This wasn't a date. They just ended up like hanging out and feeling a connection.
Are you saying that on their first dates, people should not be breaking and entering into their exes' homes to retrieve items?
I thought you were serious for a second. Should they not maybe take a Diva cup or a Moon cup and put it in the rice
food?
In the fridge? I'm going to say no. I don't know. That's my professional expertise.
It's a controversial take, everyone.
Yes, it
is.
I mean, I understand breaking and entering now is a normal first date. So I'm behind that. We're joking, everybody.
We are not endorsing breaking the law. Please don't.
We are not. Any other of our worst love lessons?
I mean, I think I covered. I thought Dom should have set some better boundaries for himself and not agreed to go to this meeting with his ex and with his ex-best friend. I think Yaz got super, super mean. And there's the fun, chaotic version. And then when she was revealed and her vulnerability was out there and the lie was out there that she didn't actually break up with her ex, but he broke up with her, She protected herself by getting mean and getting mean to Dom and pushing him away and saying his feelings were basically invalid and making him seem like he's the problem, actually, for what happened, for her not being honest. She just tried to turn it around because she was so uncomfortable. And I so understand that feeling where you're feeling too exposed and you cannot tolerate it. So you have to do something to feel like you've shored yourself up again. And the way that she did it was obviously not nice, not effective, not recommended. So that was hard to see because it was a sad ending to an otherwise wonderful day that they had.
Yeah, absolutely. When things got a little bit too real or they got a little bit too close, or she guarded up, her walls went up, and how they went up was her kind of lashing out and saying mean things to somebody who didn't deserve it. And that happens, right? That happens when we are scared, when we are worried of getting hurt or somebody seeing the real parts of us. That can happen. But that's also where our work is, because how do we deeply connect with others if our guard is constantly going up? Because I'm a big believer that it's not somebody else's job to push through that, to make you bring down your walls. But the other thing I'll say about Yaz, and that I'll say about the former version of myself, is that in that kind of scenario, she is unsafe. She is emotionally unregulated, and it's very hard to stay connected to somebody long term if they're going to be unsafe in that way and you don't know when it's going to happen.
Yeah, I agree. And luckily, Dom was able to stay very regulated despite this happening.
Yep.
And he gives her the chance to come back around a couple of weeks, months later, right? He doesn't hold it against her. But yeah, you could see how if he was reactive to that, how this could have become an explosive conversation and it could have led to a lot more damage being done. So she was lucky that he did not really fight back and escalate things further, because that would have been a real volatile path they could have walked. And people do walk with their partner. But I agree.
They usually do in rom-coms. Usually one person gets mean and the other person matches that mean.
Oh.
I loved the fact that Dom was like, wait, so you're saying I was too truthful today? That's your big takeaway from this? Like, you're trying to yell at me for being too honest? Mm-hmm. Like, he protected himself. He stood up for himself. And he said, no, that's actually not okay with me. And I'm going to exit.
Draw that line.
And it was great to see a grown-up response.
Yes, because it wasn't like, you're crazy for saying that. He didn't double down and make her to be a villain because of this, that he really didn't agree with her approach, but he saw it for what it was and set his line, but did it in a really reasonable, kind way. And I think we really have a hard time in our relationships drawing that line without being cruel about it. Because we're so mad that somebody hurt us or did what they did in the first place that we feel justified for being really harsh in how we respond to set our boundary, whatever it might be. But you don't have to be, and it doesn't help to be. And so seeing him do that was like a beautiful example.
I know. And one of the gifts that I have given myself with growth and work is to be able to step away from those situations so I don't lash out on people. That's a level of sabotage. Because people shouldn't have to put up with that shit. People should not have to put up with my unhealed wrath. And anybody listening, nobody should have to put up with that shit for you either. But there's a saying, and some people said it was Marilyn Monroe. I don't know who said it, but just if you want me at my best, you have to handle me at my worst. I don't agree with that. If your worst is abusive or mean, that is not partner behavior. And one of the biggest things we can give ourselves and our current or future partner is to learn how to step away, is to learn how to pause, is to learn how to. Sometimes I'm like, I just need to go to the room and have a little bit of downtime and process or think this through. So I don't say things that are going to hurt this, because I love this and I don't want to hurt this.
Yes. And I feel like I talk about this with my couples every day. You have to know how to take a break from a conversation or a fight, because there's a certain point, research shows, when you're emotionally flooded, when your fight or flight has been triggered, that it really isn't productive. Like your body is not sending resources to the higher functionings of your brain through your frontal lobe to process information and take perspective. You're just surviving and protecting yourself. And that's when fights get really off the track and people get really elevated. And it's so hard to take a break when you're in the middle because you want to fix it or figure it out or convince the other person, but it's just not productive. And I think it's both being able to ask for a break, but also respecting when the other person says they need a break, and both people allowing that to happen. Because you're right, it's not good to be the person who says all the mean things and fires every bullet and regrets it later and has to make up for it later. Then you actually do yourself a disservice because now you have to make up for your bad behavior and your points didn't get across. It's not good for the other person, for their partner, who gets the onslaught of harsh words. So.
Agreed.
I agree.
Agreed.
Favorite quotes?
What were some of our favorite moments and quotes? And there's a lot. This, to me, this, although very English and a little slangy, I had to look up a couple of words just to make sure I understood them. And
Innit? That's my favorite. I wish we said that here.
I do too. They said pang at one point, which meant confident. She goes, "You mean I'm Peng?" And I was like, what the fuck is that? And then gaff is apartment.
Yeah.
When she was like, "You love his gaff." When I was like, what the fuck's a gaff?
Yeah.
So yeah, I had to look up a couple of things and it was hilarious because I said, "Are you watching this with subtitles?" Because I watch everything with subtitles now. And definitely things where accents can sometimes make me lose information. And you were like, "No, I'm not watching subtitles." I'm like, "You're a baller, man." I've been watching subtitles pretty much hands down for the last 5 years, but that's probably age
because it's
too,
on my phone right in front of my face. So
That's true.
I'm in it.
You're in it. But the scene where he does go see his ex and they're both so condescending, although his best friend's just like, "Good to see you, mate." When Yaz comes in, quote unquote, saving him. I mean, it's just a great scene.
It's the fantasy.
It's the fantasy because he's there with his ex who's looking at him like, "Oh, I feel a little sorry for you. Poor you," which is awful. And his ex-best friend, "Yo, mate, what's up? Have some food." Just checked out and she's condescending and just, "We couldn't help it. The love was so strong or so big or the connection, but we still care about you and we want everything to feel good." And then this is such a fucking Kira moment because Yaz then, even though he didn't want her to, comes in unboundaried once again and chaotic. "Hey, bub, how you doing?" And his ex-girlfriend, though, I mean, come on. She was pissed.
Oh, she was so
and critical and judgy and obviously really a little upset that Dom had maybe moved on. And that was, to me,
vindicated.
Oh, right? Oh my gosh. I have not thought of that song in 10 years or more. But yeah, it felt so chef's kiss when they walk out and Yaz has been, they tell the story about how they met. They're making it up on the spot. And it was just, I mean, those are the moments that you're like, yes. Like, I wanted that for him so much. And yeah, so to me, that was such a great moment. I love that scene. I love that little bit of poke at his ex. So what about you?
Oh, I loved that. I mean, I loved so many of their lines. There's just some funny ones. I love when she said, he asks, like, "What happened? What went wrong with you and your ex?" And she says, "There were probably a shitload of alarm bells I was snoozing through." Like, I liked that way of explaining it, of like, you just, things build up and pass by and you don't see it until you look back and then you can see what happened and what you were missing.
That's
favorite,
like every one of my clients right there.
Well, yeah. You know? The best line I have ever heard is when she's talking about the breakup scene, the moment, and she's made this hummus and he says her breath smells like hummus and she's trying to get him back into the mood and trying to go down on him and he's blowing her off about it, and that she realizes like her new motto for life is, "If you make the hummus, you should get the head." And I was like, it's ridiculous, but you want
it. Is that wrong?
Yeah, I mean, it feels like a good life motto. I don't know.
No, it was so funny of just like, hey, if you make the hummus, you should get the head. You shouldn't have to be making the hummus and giving the head. That's not an okay situation.
Give and take.
That was so funny. And then you were also, I'm going to steal this from you, but when we meet her ex, when he comes back to the apartment, and I am not a fan of him in any way, because he got cruel. He got cruel. And I do want to say, I don't think I mentioned this as worst love lessons, but he got cruel to Yaz in front of Dom and in front of his new girlfriend. And I just wanted to hold up a sign to his new girlfriend. Do you see how he's talking to her? How he's treating her in front of others, no less? This is your fucking future. Be very aware of what he is saying and what he is doing now. Because why do we think that's not going to also happen to you at some point? Exactly.
Alarm bells.
I was like, she was just sitting here watching him tear down the most vulnerable pieces of Yaz's fears and shit and triggers in front of other. I mean, that was to me was just like, this guy is terrible. He is terrible. Mm. And yeah.
Although, he is terrible. I mean, she might have been tough in the relationship. We really don't know. And she did break into his home. So, that justifies his bad behavior.
That was first date. I'm just kidding. That was the new best first date.
Don't judge me for this. I did enjoy his art. I was like, yeah, I'll take one of those. Throw it up in my house.
That's hilarious. I just thought he got really mean. And there's ways to get mean.
Without being cruel, like you said.
Without being cruel, right? And it was very pointed.
It was meant to take her down.
Absolutely.
Yeah, to destroy her.
Right. And it was not just you weren't a good girlfriend. It was,
here is
all of your biggest fucking shit and fears and triggers. And I'm going to bring them up to you in front of people. One of them you don't even know. I was not a fan.
You liked one thing that he said, though.
Just because I can rock a kimono doesn't mean I can't kick some ass. I loved the comic value that they would just throw in of just don't take this too seriously thing. And I think we need that. I think that because this is a comedy, we forget romance. They can get, even if it's a romantic comedy, a lot of them can be dark.
Yeah,
a lot of them
heavy,
can get deep heavy. And heavy, right? And I love that this just kept, even though that was real, it kept it light. Mm-hmm. You're still able to laugh at things and everything else. Do we feel that anybody is emotionally unavailable?
I mean, I think Yaz is more unavailable than Dom is because of all the reasons that we've said.
Agreed.
Yes. I think Dom is pretty available. I think that, like I said, I think that he can be a little too passive and people pleasing, and he seems like not a problem, but avoidant withdrawer people tend to seem like they're not the problem and they're just going with the flow and it's you're asking too much and blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. So I'm curious if there's something under the water for him a little bit to figure out. But I think Yaz, with a little bit of work, is available. She wants to be, she's invested in being in a partnership. She just needs to figure out some of her stuff.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Some of it felt just like youth to me, too, of just figuring out who you are and who you want to be and what you want. And that's what I think our 20s are for.
Yeah.
There is a pretty good statistic about marital success rate when you get married under 25. And I personally feel it's because we don't really know ourselves. And when we get married so young, we don't have a chance to really be able to stand in our own as a solid person in a relationship. And sometimes people grow up together and it works, but a lot of times it doesn't, unfortunately. And I think that there's a reason for that. I'm really happy that I traveled a lot and I got to know who I was. And it took me a while to keep figuring out who I was. But I think that, yeah, some of this is just them still figuring out who they are and what adult relationships are like and how to still love someone and be yourself. And yeah.
Oh, agreed. Absolutely agreed.
Let's get into the deep dive.
Let's do it. So the deep dive this week is all about breakups. because as much as this was a romantic comedy about Yaz and Dom, there was so much of this movie that was about their breakups from their exes not long ago. And we look at how they handle their breakups, how they have processed them, and the biased views they have, which we all do, and then how they're managing the healing in the moment with each other. And I think it's a really interesting chance to explore, how do we break up with people? How do we make sense of breakups? What is a good way to heal? What are less productive ways to heal? And all of that.
I think that we have a lot of confusion and not a lot of helpful information around breakups. What we should do when we've broken up, how long we should grieve and heal, what we can do to get that process moving or get support around it. The only thing I ever heard about breakups growing up was you need to take as half the amount of time you dated is how long it will take to get over a breakup. And that's the most now insane information or advice I've ever heard.
So stupid.
And I've seen people have short relationships who have grieved for a really long time. I've seen people have long relationships who have barely, you know, I think it's different for everybody. So I just wanted to have just a good conversation of whether it be a shorter term relationship or a long term relationship or even a marriage. What do we do? What is the smartest and best ways to get through a breakup and heal from the breakup and be ready to possibly date again? Mm. What are your thoughts? I have some thoughts, but I want to know your thoughts first.
I mean, I'd start by saying there's no hard and fast rules as much as we wish that there were, right? There's no hard and fast rules for grieving when somebody dies. It's just a process that you go through. And some people do no contact. Some people want to stay in touch, right? There's all sorts of ways of approaching specifics of it. And I think that part of it is just you deciding what's best for you. I will say, when the breakup first happens, there is always the wish that it's amicable. And most of the time, it's not. It's not mutually agreed. It's not amicable because a breakup is often one-sided and it's painful. It's really painful. And there's no avoiding that piece of it. So there's the fantasy of it being done mutually, or the fantasy of us being the ones self-righteously, fully justifiably ending a relationship that is so clearly bad because the other person was the worst, right? We all wish that was the case. And I think that's protective at first. I think people really need to have the fantasy and to blame the other person because it is so devastating. It is such a loss in our life that you cannot jump into the work right away of asking, what did I do? What part of this was me? What part of this relationship wasn't working for me? What part did I contribute to? Like, those are important questions that you have to ask and answer to be ready for your next relationship. But I think people should not feel pressured to, day one of being single, start digging and finding where they should hold themselves accountable and analyzing. Because first, you just have to protect yourself and get through it. It really is survival at the beginning.
Just grieve, because the thing is that we don't talk about enough is that, especially if this was a longer term relationship, that person was a major player in our life. And any time that there is a removal of a major player in our life, maybe that's even a job we didn't like, maybe that's a friendship that went bad, there is going to be a grieving process. There is going to be sadness. There is going to be hurt. There is going to be pain, because it's just a transition. Whether you were the one who instigated it, whether you weren't, I think that we just have to give ourselves some time to grieve, to feel. And what you just described, I'm sure you're going to back this up, is when we want to right away get into, but to do that immediately, what did I do? How do I do this better? That is to think through your feelings versus feel that grief. You have to feel that loss. You have to feel that sadness. And then when that starts to lift, when that starts to feel a little better, then starting to look at, are there things I can do better? How do I choose maybe a better match next time? How do I show up maybe with more authenticity and reality? The biggest thing I always just tell people, how do I slow it down so I can maybe see some of the things that I missed in this last relationship, because we got so excited in the obsessive love phase. So to me, that's the biggest thing. It's just is taking that time. And you can't really put a number on that, because grief looks different to everybody. But I think a lot of people, all of a sudden, they're lonely again. So they just go out there and start dating again with no grieving, with no introspection. And that's not good either.
No, I think that's exactly right. You don't want to think the feelings. You want to feel the feelings, as painful as they are.
And they are.
And they are. Breakups are the living worst. They are devastating. They can be so absolutely devastating.
I think about my biggest breakup I had before Danny. I'm not even joking. For a month of my life, I lived in this pink fuzzy robe I had. I watched a sci-fi series, incomplete, so like 8 seasons of just not thought-provoking TV.
What's
Eureka, which I watched again recently and I loved it, by the way. So it held up besides the breakup. But I just had to let myself grieve. I just remember shuffling around in this robe for like weeks on end, crying and watching this TV. Because that's all I honestly had the bandwidth for, because it was abrupt, it was unexpected, and I was on the receiving end of that breakup. And it took me a lot longer than I'm a little embarrassed about how long. It probably took me at least a year or so to get really over that, to a point where I could even think about dating again. Because I had to absolutely heal so that I did not go out guarded. And I think that we don't talk about, when people haven't healed, they can hurt other people and take them in their unhealed wake. They can really bring other people down by maybe jumping into something that feels good and then freaking out 6 weeks or 3 months in because they haven't done any of that grieving or that healing.
And grieving and healing, as we all say, looks different, because your description, I think, makes total sense. Love the idea of a fuzzy robe. So comforting. And I was like a take action. Like, I would rearrange my bedroom after every breakup because it felt like my whole life had changed. My bedroom had to feel different because it had memories of that person, or like who I was when I was with that person. So like, my bed had to move to a different place. And my longtime boyfriend, early in our dating relationship, broke up with me on prom night, on our senior prom night, okay? And the next day I had a haircut scheduled and I cut all of my hair off. I was like, I have to take ownership of my life, of my identity, and cut all of my hair off. And we got back together that day. So it was all for naught. But you've got to figure out what things make you feel like safe and you have space to feel your feelings. And for me, it's taking ownership of my space and my appearance in a weird way. But there's no avoiding the feelings. Guess what? If you cut all your hair off and move your bed around, you still feel incredibly devastated and sad and lonely. It doesn't change that. You just have to figure out the way that makes you feel safe, comforted with your robe and your show, whatever it is. But there's no skipping the hard part.
There isn't. And the one thing I will say is I tend to isolate during times like this. When I am down, when I am depressed, I isolate. And the one thing I have learned and is backed up by science is when we're going through things like that is when we need community. That is when we need support. And the isolate just prolongs, I think, that grieving, because we're just stuck in our mind, just ruminating of all the things that maybe we did wrong, or we thought we could have done better, or what did we miss, or all of that. And just, you know, not only do I think that therapy can help, and even somewhere down the road, maybe coaching, and that just that one of the most important things is actually to reach out to friends, to get yourself out of your house. I will also say, the day after I broke up, I had some friends who are like, let's go out, let's tie one on, let's get some champagne and have fun. That was the worst idea I've ever had, because the next day, that level of hangover with the depression.
Not recommended.
That was a rough weekend. I had made that breakup 10 times worse by getting drunk and a hangover and everything else. And I mean, I was really in a low place those next couple of days. And I was like, I got to know myself well enough that I can't be doing that anymore, or I'm not going to move forward or heal from this. But any other final thoughts about breakups and what to do and how to heal?
I mean, I think the other thing is that there's a lot of focus on this idea of closure and this fantasy of getting closure. And And find, if you think hard enough about it, or if you have that conversation, that you'll find the answer. What did happen? Why did we break up? And most of the time, it is so many things that contributed to it. It's things that happened. It's things that didn't happen that should have. It's people growing apart, people needing different things. It's such a complicated answer that you will never get the full picture of. So people shouldn't hold themselves to this idea that there will be a point of closure when the grief will be over and it will make sense and they'll move on. It's just messier than that. And you'll know when you feel like you've done enough processing and it makes enough sense and you are aware of the things that you need to be aware of and the lessons you can take that you can move forward. But some people, I think, wait months, years, because they think they're missing closure. And I don't know if you agree with this, but don't wait for closure.
I absolutely do, because I think that sometimes that closure we're looking for, we're never going to get. Even if we have a deep conversation, even if we have a really very real and tough conversation, they may not have the self-awareness to understand what went wrong.
Yeah.
They may not have the information that you're looking for. We, on some level, have to create our own closure. We have to create our own healing and closure to be able to move forward. Because once again, that's just giving our power away to now a person who's not even in our life to make us feel okay about this. And I think that it's a little bit easier for avoidance to feel like they don't need closure than it is for anxious. Because as anxious, yes. I want all of the answers. I want to fully fucking understand every second of what happened and why we broke up so I never have to feel this way again. And that's not real.
Yeah.
Instead, at the end of the day, after some grieving, what I can do is say, what didn't work here? What was my role? How can I do better moving forward? Is there a skill or a mindset that I can be working on so this doesn't trip me up in the next relationship? I think that those conversations are super duper helpful and important, but they're not right away. And the last thing I will say for my single people out there is, if you meet somebody who's just gotten out of a breakup or is going through a divorce, I have a pretty tough, hard and fast rule that you do not go there. If that person is still separated and going through a divorce, even if they say, I'm ready, this marriage has been over for years, we haven't had sex in 5, 10 years, what, I've heard all of the stories. They're still going to go through so many feelings and so much grieving in that process. It's just not a time to build something. A lot of times I see my clients end up becoming unpaid therapists in those moments rather than new partners. And that's not going to build a loving relationship, because once again, I'm here for love, and that's not going to build love. That's going to build you trying to fix somebody who's hurting and not who should be going to a therapist and not you.
Although I think there are times, like with the people who've been married but separated for 5 years, right? Those scenarios happen. If they're pretty secure and self-reflective, I think that it can work. It's probably the exception, not the rule. And you've got to know that you're still dealing with their ex. Like, you're going to have to be okay with having that person be a part of the conversation in a much more active way than is typical. And a lot of people don't love that. So you got to know what you're signing up for, sure.
For sure. I think that them being separated for 5 years and both of them being healthy and healing is very much the exception, not the rule.
It's the
in
exception.
My world.
Yeah, absolutely.
In my world. I see a lot of times, particularly men, because they're not used to being alone. They don't have a lot of outside friendships. Their wife or their partner was their main source of connection.
Mm-hmm.
And so they are instantly getting back online. They're instantly dating again. I see this. I hear this story a lot. And then people are hurt that it didn't go anywhere, or they're hurt that they put all of this time and energy in with this person who was just really not ready.
Not ready.
And so to me, that 5 year, we're good, this has been over, that's a lot of talk more than real in the world that I live in. Personally. So favorite characters or moments? I added moments just because I think there was so much fun little.
So many good moments.
Moments in this. Yeah. So to me, one of my favorite characters was definitely his best friend. That guy, the himbo that he was, just happy to be there. just, did you say he had two brain cells? Oh my gosh, I loved him. And I loved the uncle or the relative when he's at this barbecue and the song comes on and this guy who basically blew him off like three different times at this barbecue, he just gets like really calm and sings this song at like the top of his lungs, like with the most feeling that you've ever seen. And I'm just like, life is fucking weird like this. I love this moment where he just gets some rando singing at the top of his lungs, you know, that he loves this song. And then you're like, wow. Okay.
I loved that.
What about characters and moments for you?
I loved Mona. I could have used a lot more Mona.
Oh my God. More Mona.
The attitude, the what's in it for me. I like how Mona's not responsible for anything, though. They're like, oh, I guess Mona put your moon cup in our food. That Mona's got such a weird sense of humor. I need a Mona movie. Whoever's listening, I want to see a Mona movie. Colin Firth showing up to make them, what was it, tacos? Pork tacos? Burritos?
Burritos.
I should have known better. Burritos. I didn't even recognize him at first. He just embodied the character so deeply.
Yes. I'm going to skip ahead a little bit here to our fun facts and trivia because BBC came together, wanted to do this film. The female director who took this on, Rain Alan Miller, originally was set in Northern London, which is where movies are usually set, I guess, in London. And she was like, no, I want to go to this more vibrant and interesting, diverse part of London. And they're thinking this is a rom-com. And they're like, wouldn't it be great to get the king of English rom-coms in this movie? And I guess they had a mutual friend and they reached out and he was like,
sure,
I'll do it. So it's hilarious because it's called Love. And I believe from my love for GBBO, Great British Break Off, that they say guacamole in England. I'm not even going to comment to that.
Like a duck? Guacamole.
So that it would be like Love Guacamole. So that it was a total play on which Colin Firth was in, right? And the director and the cast were like, he was lovely. It was like a one-day shoot. He came in, he told stories, but just like that he stayed for the whole day and gave tips and talked about his time and rom-coms and was, I guess everybody was like, he was so lovely in every way, which because Colin Firth is my Mr. Darcy for sure, I love Colin Firth. That just brought this home for me when I saw this the first time. And then I'm like, is that fucking Colin Firth is the burrito
done.
Guy? Done. I love this movie. This just took it to the next level for me. So the fact that Colin Firth came in and did this ridiculous cameo.
The best.
Amazing. Okay. Any other favorite characters or moments?
I just really liked the end, too. I thought that Dom's recollection of what happened between him and Yaz was like a really beautiful way of describing it. Every moment. Can I say every moment? I loved every moment in this film and all the characters.
I agree. In case you guys did not know, and this movie is on Hulu, for those of you who have not watched it, that's where you can watch it here in the States. And it is, I think it's 98% on Rotten Tomatoes. This actually was up, won awards, which we don't see rom-coms win awards in the States. So this actually won awards. It was at Sundance last year and was like a big splash and success. But let me get into a couple of the behind the scenes and the fun facts. There's not a ton, unfortunately. So the budget for this, ready for it, was $3.8 million, okay? Which is very low budget now for movies. And I actually did, because I'm this person, went over and looked at some of the last year, the budget for American rom-coms. So Anyone But You was $25 million. Ticket to Paradise was $60 million and Shotgun Wedding was $65 million. And I want to just say, what's going on, Hollywood? Because you just spent literally 200% or however you do that money or budget on these movies that to me were way, way, way less successful and
That's
not as good as the mm-hmm. or interesting. Please, you don't have to spend a lot of money to make an incredible romantic comedy or just film, because you get two great actors who can interact and connect and a great script. And Hollywood, listen, things like, I have actually seen better rom-coms on Amazon and Netflix that I have coming out in theaters in the last few years. And I'm excited for these more lower budget, you know, more character driven and script driven and real type of rom-coms. More of this, please. More of this, please. I would sit here and watch this movie with different characters in different situations again and again and again.
It's actually an interesting idea of like sequels, you know, of two people meeting, having a day. Did we just start our first script for a movie?
Is this what are we
happening?
Writing romance novels now? Is there, his name going to be Rowan or Ronan?
How could you bring up Rowan like that so casually? Yes, his name is going to be Rowan, obviously. And they're going to be fairies.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
Oh, my God. Okay.
And a couple more things that I heard about this. When interviewed, everybody who was in this movie was like, I had no interest in being a romantic comedy. I had no interest in doing anything like this. But everybody fell in love with the script so much. They're like, let's do it. And I love that they seem just like normal people. Mm-hmm. Absolutely beautiful and adorable, but they're not Hollywood attractive, right? They're not. I think he's probably a very average height, about 5'8 or 5'9. She's a pretty average size. I just like when I see real people and not stylized people. And David, who was Dom, said that he loved that Dom was unapologetically emotional and loved playing that as a Black man. And has actually had Hollywood come knocking. He goes, I just want to play interesting roles here in London and as a Black person in England. And I love that for him. I love that. Don't get Hollywooded, David. Dumb. Don't do it. Don't do it. And then once again, it was actually moved to South London, which is not a part of the city that they show all that often. And I love the diversity and the color. And she actually, Rain, was compared to Wes Anderson in this, that it was stylized. And I'm like, I don't get that at all. This felt like its very own, very modern style, a very fresh. And just here's something that I thought was really interesting is I even talked about how they were lighting the main Black characters in a way that's different than when white people direct. How Black people are lit. There's a lot of purples and blues. And when I watched it the second time, I was like, oh, I see it. And it's beautiful. It's like really well shot. It's a movie to me that the minute it starts, you are engrossed in it. And I was there smiling like a fool till the end, just loving every second of it both times that I watched it.
Well, speaking of the end, what's your rewrite? Do you have one?
I don't. I absolutely do not. I like the characters and the arc that they gave them. I liked that they were not perfect. I also liked that they weren't terrible. I liked that they were human, who had their own level of shit and their own level of healing to do from these breakups. But that I actually don't have an alternative ending. I thought it was great that she did the grand gesture. I think it was great that they just ended on a kiss where they're both like, hey, let's go maybe go on a date and see if this has anything. I wouldn't change much, that's for sure, besides maybe more Colin Firth.
Oh, well, you know what? That is actually, I hadn't thought about that. That's an excellent point. More Colin Firth. I think in my ideal world, after she gets really mean when she's called out for lying, she would still be really mean, but there would be like one line of, you know what, you're right. I'm getting really defensive. Clearly, I'm like not over this and I'm not super ready to be vulnerable with you. And I see that now. And then they would have gone and had their time apart in the montage. And then everything else would be the same. But it didn't need that. It's just the couple's therapist and me insists
on that. I actually love that change. I love that change of maybe behaving badly, but even realizing in the moment. I'm behaving badly. I say that sometimes to Danny. I'm like, I know that what I just said was ridiculous and I'm going to go step away.
That's where I'm at right now.
But this is where I'm at and I can't be my best self. So I'm gonna take a moment. And I think that actually would have been really lovely if she would have said, you've actually been great. This has been wonderful and unexpected. I think both of them are getting out for the first time since their breakup. So this connection was a little unexpected, but I love that.
Yeah.
So the question is, would they last?
I mean, We're obviously incredibly emotionally, personally invested in this couple, so we both want to say yes. And I'm inclined to say yes. I mean, I think that they're showing lots of insight and growth, and they clearly have an undeniable connection, and they are pacing it correctly. So I feel pretty confident that they would make it. What do you think?
I'd like to believe that they will, with a little bit of therapy and a little bit of work. But here's what I loved, and I think that feels similar to my relationship, is that Yaz does bring some fun. She brings some lightness and some levity, which I think relationships do need. I'm that person in my relationship. But Dom also grounds her. He brings her back down. He says, hey, I see you over here. But I'm here and I'm okay, and we're okay. And this is going to be okay. And why I think that this has potential, even if it's not in this moment that they're going to get together and it's perfect timing. But I do actually think they're a good match in a way that I would not say for most of the other movies that we've watched so far, that I think that, like I said, he grounds her. She brings some lightness, and that they just keep showing that over and over, how she's lifting him up and he's just saying, it's okay. It's okay. You don't have to be in this chaotic state like by yourself anymore.
I love it.
Any positive takeaways?
I mean, for me, the positive takeaway is about the breakups, because that really stood out to me. Of accept and embrace that breakups are hard. Breakups are messy. You can have your own biased, self-forgiving perspective on what went wrong, especially at the beginning, but then take time to process, and as we see them do, like especially Dom, being more reflective as to his role in it and what happened and lessons to take. I think the way that we watched them go through and reflect on their breakups was a really overall positive take.
I agree. And my biggest positive takeaway, I think, is that timing is something. And that if for some reason they didn't work out, I actually think they maybe could in the future. Sometimes we need a little bit of time to heal. Sometimes we need some time to grieve. Sometimes we're going through a transition. He had moved back in with his parents after the breakup. He's been a little bit of a rut and stuck. Sometimes we do need to take that time. And so that would be my takeaway.
How many tacos?
I gave overall tacos 5, love less than tacos 5. I think this movie is brilliant, and I have seen other movies similar to this. One of the biggest things that I wanted to do with this podcast is also bring a little bit quieter or not as well-known rom-coms to people, which I think this is one of them. And I'm excited if this is the new world of rom-coms. I'm excited if we are doing more things that feel so real like this. So that's super exciting to me. You also gave 5?
Fives across the board. Agree with everything you said. Just fantastic film. Loved it. Wish everyone in the world would watch it. All right, everyone. That's it for today. If you liked this, subscribe or follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or on your favorite podcast platform.
And if you loved it, and we sure hope you did, please leave us a review. It helps us get the word out about this brand new podcast. And that's exactly what we're trying to do here. Join us next week for 2011 rom-com Crazy Stupid Love with Steve Carell, Julianne Moore, Ryan Gosling, and Emma Stone.
Until next week, create your own happily ever after. And remember, if you make the hummus, you should get the head. Can we end on that? Will that be too ridiculous?
All right, I'm having a little hot flush. So that's on the air.